But rushing headlong into battle for the right cause was a habit she'd never unlearned from her rebel days. And self-recriminations wouldn't save Troyth or Alphabet Squadron or the 61st Mobile Infantry. As she stood aboard the bridge of the Nebulon B frigate Temperance, she was determined to save everyone she could. "Get the fighters ready to launch," she said, "and power up the main batteries. Prepare to fire on the surface." The Temperance was holding position in atmosphere above the scar of Troyth. Sensors had picked up the TIE swarm from afar, and Hera had decided that if Shadow Wing was attacking, her job was to intervene regardless of the situation on the ground. The frigate had successfully evaded the planetary defense network and bypassed Troyth's shields, simple enough when approaching the unprotected ruined continent, though both might prove troublesome if the battle moved elsewhere. Shield coverage appeared spotty over the city, and the frigate hadn't been able to determine whether the defense network was under enemy control. The bridge crew seemed fully aware of the gravity of the situation, despite the ease of the mission so far. The ship's captain had graciously turned command over to Hera. Now she watched sentient beings from a dozen species pull up tactical screens and weapons readings and call out commands to the fighter bays as they tried to decipher what was happening planetside.
"You're certain about this?" Storm Vane asked.
Her favorite aide had accompanied her through the hell of the mission with Vanguard. He stood ready, despite enduring the destruction of worlds and the funerals of friends.
"We fire on that mess down there, we could end up hitting our own people."
Hera eyed the tactical displays as details popped into existence. Canyon charts, troop movements, some sort of heavy bunker under assault.
"We can't wait for target IDs, but we won't be careless either. We'll start the turbo laser bombardment at minimum power with a wide dispersal pattern, grab their attention, and force the TIEs to break formation. And hope they don't all come after us? Or are we taking on Shadow Wing directly?"
She smiled grimly. It was an excellent question. On the one hand, there was every reason to think that Vanguard and the Temperance could put up a good show, even exhausted as they were. On the other hand, no one had yet beaten the 204th in a fair fight.
"One problem at a time," she said, and gave the order to fire.
Chapter 21, The Chaos of Victory. 1. Had Chesna Chattuck flown anything but a B-Wing, she'd have spearheaded the attack on Troyth. As it was, she was closer to the butt of the proverbial spear, chugging behind the Vanguard X-Wings as they sped out of the frigate's launch bay. The experience was disturbingly familiar, though she needed a moment to realize why. The last time she'd launched from a Nebulon B frigate had been the final mission of Riot Squadron and the Hellion's Dare. Not that it mattered, not really. She was where she wanted to be. The B-Wing fell as much as flew toward the surface, battered by wind and seared by the heat of atmospheric re-entry. Thruster bursts kept the vessel from spinning, but increased its speed until it dropped like a meteor. Its indicator lights flashed red, broiling the cockpit. The repairs put in place by the Temperance's engineers had involved sealant spray and jury-rigged wiring, not the refit the assault ship needed after the battle over Katadra. Chas could smell paste melting as her harness cut into her chest. She adjusted her comm with a jerky hand, ignoring Vanguard Squadron's chatter and switching to a general New Republic channel, then deployed her strike foils like a parachute. Servos whined with distress, and the ship jolted and bounced as her retro rockets and repulsors kicked in, slowing her fractionally. The canyons were visible now, the cracked expanse of the continent filling her view in all directions. Crimson energy bolts rained around her, outracing her to the ground. Chas aimed for a distant glimmering, and the glimmer soon resolved into a mass of TIE fighters and X-Wings and unidentified allies, Shadow Wing and Vanguard, and the survivors of the Lodestar. She fired into the melee. Outnumbered as the New Republic was, she figured she was more likely to hit an enemy than a foe. "When you're about to lose," Fatime had liked to say, "it never hurts to gamble." She considered firing off a missile or torpedo as well, guessing the atmospheric shockwave might scatter the enemy. It wasn't a tactic she'd tried with Shadow Wing before, which meant they might not be prepared for it, but the odds of friendly casualties were too high even for her. Her screens flared, shucking off heat, as a voice declared,
"General Syndulla to ground. How may we assist?"
It was Will Lark who replied. Chas laughed as she dropped into the melee and was embarrassed by her own sense of relief.
"General,"
Lark said,
"we have ground forces attempting to take the mining facility. I don't know what Shadow Wing is doing there. It's possible they may be attempting to detonate some kind of weapon. Regardless, we'll keep the TIEs busy, give your troops room to operate, and follow your lead,"
Syndulla responded.
"It's good to hear from you, Alphabet."
Chas watched a pair of TIEs speed out of her way. She tried to level out and barely avoided slamming into the facility dome below her, arcing back up toward the fight with cannons pumping and her vision a blur.
"You're in charge now, huh?"
she asked. Will cried out her name like Chas was the winning hand in a card game. Nath was on the comm next, declaring,
"You and that ship are sturdier than you look."
"Mostly me,"
Chas said.
"The ship's basically scrap. You know what it's like. You've been flying a junk heap for years."
"Cute, sister,"
Nath said.
"Cute."
"We're glad you're alive,"
Will said. Beneath the joy, she heard the physical strain in his voice. She couldn't see his A-wing above her and didn't have time to look. One of the Vanguard pilots was chasing a TIE her way. She tried to line up a shot, fired, and growled when her particle bolt slipped inside the enemy's wings.
"Where?"
Will began, then began shouting commands at his comrades and the X-wings. She welcomed the break as she cut through the battle, trying to comprehend the hurricane of engine trails and particle bolts to figure out whether there was a coherent plan or if she was better off just riding the wind. She locked onto a TIE and nearly shot it down before its wingmate tore apart her shields with a single volley. She cursed and tried to divert power back to the screens.
"Casualties down here are pretty bad,"
Nath said.
"Lodestar's gone and a lot of the crew with it. Most of the other pilots. No word about Kairos. No word from Aiden or Quill either. Unless you..."
"Nothing,"
Chas said.
"Yeah, I figured."
She was surprised to hear disappointment in his voice. She swallowed her own reaction, tried to channel it into the physical act of piloting. But Quill had lied to her, betrayed her. If she was dead, focus on the damn fight. Will kept calling orders and updates. Vanguard squadron moved in response, trapping TIEs before they could hit the troops on the ground and disrupting enemy maneuvers before they could be fully borne. A Vanguard X-wing went down, splashing against a canyon wall and sending an avalanche tumbling down the cliffside. A TIE went wild when a bolt clipped its cockpit sphere, spinning and spraying shots as it hurtled into the distance. Somehow, Chas was surprised to realize, the New Republic forces were surviving. They weren't winning, though. Winning would be costly. She felt an unfamiliar churn in her gut at the thought of dying. She had responsibilities now. The B-Wing's gyroscopes spun her foils around the cockpit. She swept the air with firepower as she attempted to regain altitude. She was frantically trying to determine whether a TIE fight was headed her way when Nath said,
"B-Wing running quiet today?"
"What?"
"No music,"
Nath said. She swore and laughed bitterly as she evaded a deadly volley. She wasn't about to explain that her collection was gone.
"You need me to sing?"
she asked.
20 credits if you do."
She searched for an appropriate oath. He was baiting her. Of course he was baiting her. She was an idiot.
"Screw it! You're on!"
she said. Which is why, as Chasna Chattuck rose into the sky and reduced a starfighter of the 204th to a ball of burning gas and metal, she began to wail into her comm. She sang about star charts and broken hearts and life as an outlaw, a ballad that had been pirated and altered and reassembled across the Outer Rim for 20 years and still had more than its share of fans. Nath laughed, the Vanguard pilots cursed or ignored her, and the oscillating sound of particle bolts joined her as her orchestra. Two. Colonel Soren Keyes recognized that the course of battle had changed and knew precisely what was required to correct it. That certainty made acceptance no less difficult. No soldier watched a plan crumble and was eager to accept that truth. But the difference between an experienced commander and a novice was that the former did not pause or shirk. The command deck of the bulk freighter was crammed with stations devoted to cargo control and load shifting, and Soren was forced to duck beneath piping and conduits as he crossed from the view screen to the comm controls. His bridge crew largely comprised the survivors of the Edict. Few escape pods from the Aery had been recovered, and the cadet's youth showed in every awkward fumble at a lever or dial. He doubted they'd flown anything larger than an airspeeder not designed to Imperial specifications. "Get me the governor," he called, resting his hand on the headset, "and signal me when the engines are at full power." None of what was occurring outside Core 9 was a surprise. He'd counted himself lucky every minute New Republic reinforcements had failed to arrive, starting from the moment the Edict and Aery had jumped into Cerberon. In truth, the foe had come far too late. He had his ship, his means of escape, and he could depart having achieved all of the 204th's objectives. The 204th's objectives, if not his own. One of the cadets made a hand signal from the engineering station. "Open the doors," Soren called, and a countdown appeared on one of the displays as the facility's great dome ever so slowly parted. An indicator lit on the headset. He fixed it over his ears and heard the sound of blaster fire. "Yadiz," he said. "Enemy naval forces have arrived at Troyth." He imagined her voice. The 204th may be the finest Imperial fighter wing left in the galaxy, she might have said. "Can you defeat them?"
"Go,"
she said instead. The difference between an experienced commander and a novice was that the former did not pause or shirk. Soren did not pause or shirk now. He deactivated the comm and shouted rapid orders to the cadets as the freighter's engines rumbled and its bulkheads rattled at a deafening volume. Low-resolution imagers assured him that 15 levels up the launch silo, the dome was nearly open wide enough for the freighter to pass through. He wiped the dust off a course projection display with his sleeve and jabbed at the controls, generating a path from the surface into the upper atmosphere and marking 5 points along the way. "Follow this trajectory until I tell you otherwise," he said, sending the data to the helmsmate. "Tie squadrons to withdraw from the battle and come aboard at these locations." He awaited the most obvious of questions. After what had become of Yadiz, he was braced to answer it.
"What about the last squadron?" the helmsmate asked.
There were 6 squadrons in a tie wing. All of them could fit aboard the freighter.
"Captain Dorita will guard our retreat. She and her squadron will rejoin us when we leave orbit."
The cadet did not question him again. Soren turned his attention to the sensor map and wondered what his next sacrifice would be, and how long before he became numb to the burdens of leadership. Three. Vanguard Squadron didn't hesitate to follow Will's orders, despite never having served under him. General Syndulla never countermanded Will, despite being a better strategist. The New Republic forces seemed to accept that this was his fight, that his experiences on Troyth and his history with Shadow Wing qualified him to lead and required that he do so. Will felt pride at the faith of his comrades, and he felt shame at his own pride. Mostly, he was focused on the battle. Moments earlier, a bulk freighter had ascended from the mining mega facility and begun a course skyward. The TIEs were rapidly enveloping it in a defensive formation while continuing to launch aggressive sorties at the New Republic starfighters. Two Vanguard craft were down, and others were showing severe damage. Nath Tenzin's Y-Wing was, to all appearances, being held together by Spit and T-5's arc welder. Dennis Rave's airspeeder had withdrawn, its engine overheated. Vitali's V-Wing had a single cannon remaining. Will's own craft had somehow escaped fresh harm, but he felt the strain on his body as he swooped and glided and fired and spun. He was trembling with fatigue, and he could only maintain the display for so long before he made an error. One would be enough. The ground forces had reported no sign of a planet-ravaging bomb. The freighter, although apparently jury-rigged with heavy weapons, was not moving toward any obvious target. As the TIE swarm thinned, Will wondered if he had been right, if Shadow Wing's primary goal was simply to escape the planet.
Enemy squadron approaching the freighter. Looks like they're docking in the cargo bay,
one of the Vanguard pilots called. Will jerked his fighter to one side as cannon bolts streamed from below and a trio of TIEs passed him by. He had been right.
Alphabet leader,
another of the Vanguard pilots, Will recognized Sat's reptilian sibilance.
Where do you want us?
He hesitated, unused to thinking, of having the luxury to think, more than a few seconds into the future mid-battle. Somewhere in the background, he heard Chas singing, her voice tinny and small.
The other TIEs, are they going aboard too?
He asked. He could see the answer on his scanner. Vitali replied,
negative.
And it gave Will another moment to consider. Shadow Wing was fleeing. He couldn't prove it, but he was certain. If he pursued, more New Republic pilots would die. More Imperial pilots would die. If he pursued, the chaos would continue at least a little longer. And if he didn't? Nath's words came to his mind unbidden. If you want to walk away without firing a shot, you be prepared to live with it. If Operation Cinder comes round again, if Shadow Wing picks up where they left off, you don't get to have regrets. I can live with it, Will whispered to himself and to his ship. And he could.
We're ready to support you.
It was General Syndulla's voice, calm and encouraging.
The Temperance is prepared to engage.
He suspected she would back whatever decision he made. She trusted Will would serve the needs of the New Republic. He adjusted his comm, opening a general channel. The words that emerged from his mouth tasted swollen and bitter. He'd spoken openly to the 204th twice before, and he knew he was now betraying something, someone, that he couldn't entirely place.
This is Will Lark to the opposing force. Power down your weapons and surrender. Repeat, power down and surrender. All airborne forces should ground themselves immediately.
His lips were dry and tasted like blood, but the hardest part was done. The last words came out like breathing.
No one else has to die today.
There was no reply. The TIEs continued to fire. The bulk freighter continued its ascent.
Alphabet leader!
Will cut off the Vanguard pilot.
All fighters pursue. If you can hit the freighter, do it. But don't take your eyes off the TIEs.
Ranunja, Riot Squadron's commander, had told him once that it was no crime to fire on a retreating opponent. There's nothing dishonorable or treacherous about attacking the enemy from behind, or about the enemy doing the same to us, she'd said. This is not a parlor game, where the next round is something to be anticipated eagerly. This is a war, won in part by disabling military forces. He understood that. Still, as he fired toward the freighter as it sped toward the bright stars, He was sure he had forgotten something vital. Four. Three of the TIE squadrons were now aboard. The bulk freighter roared through the upper atmosphere, veering sharply away from the New Republic frigate above and the Scar of Troyth below, and toward the planet's more populous regions. With grim satisfaction, Colonel Soren Keyes observed through aging instruments as the first concentrated particle beams from the planetary defense network ignited the sky. The ensuing flashes could have heralded the birth of a new star. The beams were concentrated toward the Nebulon B frigate as it attempted to intercept, though a handful raked clouds near the New Republic starfighters. Soren wondered what it had taken Governor Yadiz and her troops to recapture the defense satellite control centers. What heroics had been performed on the surface that he had been blissfully unaware of? He imagined Imperial guerrillas storming outposts fortified by local defenders, urged to retake Troyth and obey their new governor. Vary Yadiz might have known the 204th's objective, but her troops surely had believed they were fighting for their planet, not the survival of Shadow Wing. "Bring Squadron 2 aboard," he said as the sensor map changed. Even from across the ship, he could hear the rush of wind inside the cargo bay. Somehow, his crew heard him and relayed the orders. He turned attention to his headset. "Captain Derrida, are your pilots prepared?"
"Last one standing, Colonel. We're down two ships, but the satellites are giving us room to breathe. So long as no fresh enemy starfighters arrive, we can escort you out of orbit."
Dorita's voice was hoarse, the words clipped as she expelled them between evasive maneuvers. Soren watched her fighter spiral and spin on the scanner.
"Good," he said. "We'll see you shortly."
Dorita said something in reply, but it was lost in static. Her mark disappeared from the scanner as she, too, was destroyed. Soren allowed himself a moment of grief, but only a moment. When he refocused, his gaze strayed to a viewscreen. His eyes were drawn not to the flare of starfighter combat, but to the ground far beneath them, the diffused glimmering of a million towers rising from a landscape constructed over centuries. It was an unexceptional world, Troyth, a slovenly cousin to Coruscant, a forgotten stepbrother to the colonial factory worlds. But the governor's guerrillas and the civilians who had supported them were as majestic as any pilots in Shadow Wing. Troyth would never be reclaimed by the Empire, he thought, but Soren Keyes had never been a true believer in the Empire anyway. He believed in people. His people, mostly. But in a galaxy where the Empire was no more, perhaps his duties as a soldier extended further. He had what he wanted, yet he'd achieved it on the backs of those who'd looked to him for aid. "Forget Soren Keyes. Remember Devon." "Arm the missiles," he said. "Target all New Republic outposts and fire on my mark." The Star Destroyer Edict's ordnance, transferred to the freighter, wasn't much of a parting gift for the warriors of Troyth. But the missiles would leave whole districts in ruins. They would turn rebel bunkers into craters and boil lakes and collapse factories larger than mountains. They would ensure that the fighting could continue long after Shadow Wing departed, and that millions of Imperial loyalists would not march readily into detention camps under New Republic domination. That would have to be enough. Five. The air was thin, but not so thin that Chasna Chattuck couldn't hear the shriek of the missiles as they left the freighter and drew fiery trails across the sky. She stuttered through the last lyrics of her song and came to a breathless halt.
"Missile launch,"
someone called over the comm.
"No kidding,"
she muttered. She scanned the atmosphere between her B-wing and the freighter. Seven TIEs were all that remained of the enemy's rear guard, but they were holding up well against Vanguard's greater numbers. Will's voice came through, calmer than she would have expected.
All ships, intercept any missiles in range. Priority is the missiles. Continue pursuit of the freighter only if you can't reach the primary target.
Chess had fallen far behind after taking a glancing blow to one thruster. She was barely able to stay airborne as it was. She'd already accepted the bitter knowledge that she couldn't catch the freighter. She looked to her scanner and blew out a breath as she set a new course. The missile she'd chosen was headed toward Thanner Lake, descending in a long arc that Chas had seconds to intercept. She let gravity do much of the work of acceleration, knowing if she opened her throttle further, she'd blow her whole engine. Wisps of cloud spattered her canopy and mixed with the spots of her vision. She gave her scanner a glance and felt a pang as the freighter grew increasingly distant. "Don't think about it," she told herself. "You got Syndulla here, Will and Nath survived. Anything else would have been a bonus." She switched to ion guns as she approached the blazing comet of the missile. Her scanner showed other fighters pursuing other missiles, disappearing over the horizon and out of range. She was surprised that Will's A-wing wasn't among the pursuers, more surprised to see that Nath's Y-wing was. Her targeting computer approximated a range to the missile. She let the mechanisms minutely adjust her course. She wondered what the children of the empty sun taught about saving non-believers. The thought came from nowhere. She squeezed her trigger. Searing white energy poured from her cannons. The missile was still a distant, burning object, but if she missed at such a speed, she wouldn't have a second chance. At best, she'd get a chance to look it in the eye as she passed it half a kilometer away. Ion bolts cut a path through clouds. The B-wing followed. Chas waited for a time that felt imperceptibly short and indeterminably long before the whole sky flashed and she stared into catastrophe, refusing to close her eyes. Her ship seemed to snap as it was tossed back by the shockwave, and she felt her skull smash against the back of her seat as a spider web of cracks appeared in her canopy. Then the flash faded. The missile was gone, detonated above the city. The B-wing resumed its course. In the sudden tranquility, Chas wondered what would become of herself. Nath Tenzant was flying low. Low enough that he would have been below the planet's shields if the region had still had any. His Y-wing shuddered violently several times a minute, and the floor of the cockpit beneath his right foot was alarmingly hot, to the point where his soul was melting against his rudder pedal. T5 had mercifully shut down most of the console displays to spare him the infinitely scrolling warnings. All of which explained why he hadn't joined the squadron chasing the freighter beyond Troyth's orbit. All of which also explained why he was low enough to intercept one of the moon-smashing missiles that Shadow Wing had kindly decided to share before departure. Will was calling orders, assigning missiles to Vanguard craft. Nath waited till the rest of the fighters had been matched up and winced when he saw a warhead still untargeted, heading his way.
"All right,"
he said to the droid.
"Set course and see what we can do."
He succinctly announced his intentions on the New Republic channel. No one seemed to notice in the chaos. Nath wondered if Will was aware he was still in the fight. The Y-wing rocketed toward its quarry, gradually gaining altitude. With all the damage the Y-wing had sustained, however, it would take a miracle for Nath to shoot down the missile. His targeting computer was offline, and T5 couldn't compensate. He considered other options and found them lacking. Unless he wanted to hurl himself directly onto the missile, he lacked the arsenal to make much of a difference. He entered a thick cloud front, took a deep breath of boot rubber fumes, and listened to Will and General Syndulla exchange updates on the freighter's progress. He thought of the boy and all they'd been through that day, about their confrontation over the transmitter, and how blasted disappointed Will had seemed. The image of Will in his brain flowed into an image of the crowds packed into the tubes of the web, who'd roared at him, cheered for him, begged him with every breath to save them from the governor's forces. It wasn't like it had been in the rebellion. People had begged him to save them then, too. But now they were stupid enough to believe he could. He cursed and tried to peer through the clouds in the direction of the missile. Luke Skywalker shot down the Death Star without a targeting computer, he thought. But Luke Skywalker hadn't been blind when he'd done it. He had less than a minute till intercept.
Droid!
He called.
Where's that missile going to hit?
One of his displays flickered and showed a chart of the planet's surface. A marker blinked 80 kilometers south of the central spaceport, the old Skybottom district. He vaguely remembered a support mission in the sector, and couldn't for the life of him recall if the area had been evacuated of civilians. The missile was descending toward his position. He squeezed off a few shots in its general direction, well aware the bolts would go wide. In all likelihood, if he ever got a glimpse of the missile, it would be too late to do anything. He had 10 seconds, maybe 15.
Any casualty estimates?
He asked. The droid didn't answer. Nath didn't have time to wait. He scowled at the scanner and made a decision. He channeled weapons power, repulsors, life support, dampeners, everything but thrusters into his deflector. His boot was stuck to his rudder pedal, and his toes felt like they were on fire. But he managed to fine-tune his vector for what he hoped was an optimal intercept course.
You got anything you want to say?
He began. But he didn't finish the sentiment before white light filled the clouds. He perceived the missile and the brilliance of its burning trail for only a fraction of a second. The droid squealed, proximity alarms wailed, and the blaze of the missile was joined by the blaze of his deflector screen. He'd channeled all his power to the port side, and he rolled to starboard, simultaneously hoping that he'd made his move too early and that he'd timed it just right. There was a noise like a thunderclap, and the Y-Wing spun wildly through the air, nearly dislodging Nath from his harness. Sharp pain spiked down his left shoulder as he was tossed about. Vision was utterly beyond him, but what he didn't see wasn't bright. No explosion, at least. He fumbled, blind and dizzy, with his controls. His fingers twisted shaking knobs, and he feared he'd done more harm than good, until the Y-Wing bucked. Metal rang, and suddenly the spin slowed to a violent side-to-side sway. He might have thanked T5 if he hadn't had more urgent concerns.
Where is it?
He asked, or tried to ask, though the air was thin and he could barely hear himself.
Where's the damn missile?
The port side of his canopy was black, scorched to the point of opacity. It looked like it would shatter at a tap. Sparks spurted into Nath's field of view, but he couldn't tell where they came from. He felt a jolt of worry, wondered whether T5 had paid for his miscalculations, then saw the droid's message on his console. The scanner was centered on the missile. The weapon jerked to and fro, as if the scanner image itself were malfunctioning. It was falling, but no longer accelerating beyond gravity's usual allowance.
Let's go!
Nath cried, and brought the Y-Wing around. The missile had clipped the Y-Wing's deflector bubble without touching the ship itself. There hadn't been more than a few centimeters of clearance. There couldn't have been for the plan to work. But Nath had pulled it off with a vessel that could barely scrape its way across a tarmac without scars. The energy of the deflector had shorted out the missile's systems, and now the weapon was dropping unguided toward the planet's surface.
We should be dead,
Nath murmured as he fired wildly at the falling warhead. With its thrusters gone, he'd hit it sooner or later.
We're going to get a medal for this.
T5 squealed through the comm.
I said we. Your boy better be happy.
Nath growled and concentrated on saving the world. Seven. The cockpit's lights glowed red. The silver curve of the main console reflected and distorted the overheads, drawing 1,000 arterial lines in machinery as if the ship were made of blood and bone. Erica Quell operated controls that felt sculpted to her body, tugging slender levers and caressing switches as she picked her way through the Cerberon debris field. There was a battle taking place above Troyth. There had been a battle there last time she'd seen the planet, though now there was no Lodestar, no Star Destroyer. She recognized the combatants, if not their vessels. Vanguard Squadron X-Wings pursued a bulk freighter escorted by Shadowwing TIEs, yet failed to punch through the Imperial rear guard. It had taken her hours to bring the strange ship's systems online. The planetoid had quaked and erupted as she'd examined the vessel inside the Black Tower, inspecting its components within and without. She'd been tossed to her knees more than once, as if the cursed world had exerted every bit of strength to thwart her escape. But when she'd finally deciphered the launch sequence, takeoff had been straightforward. She'd left the tower behind and found herself gliding through atmosphere in a vessel more advanced than anything she'd flown before. Once in space, with her friend's grave behind her and the black hole dominating her viewport, she'd used several more hours to take stock of her situation. She'd studied the ship's instruments and tapped into in-system communications frequencies, trying to make sense of what had happened during her time stranded. Near-total silence suggested that the New Republic had lost its fight for Cerberon. Occasional flickers of Imperial signals confirmed as much. Calm despite herself, weary beyond imagining, the two might have been connected, she realized after a while, Quell had developed a plan with the tools available to her. From inside the debris field, so close to the black hole, she hadn't been able to identify the new arrival bursting out of hyperspace at the system's edge. But her sensors had picked up the hypermatter particle surge, and she'd begun the slow process of navigating the field and crossing toward Troyth. Reinforcements represented an opportunity, she had told herself. She hadn't expected her chance to come so swiftly or in this way, but she had to take it. Now she listened to comm chatter as she flew away from the black hole, picking up only fragments thanks to distance and decryption failures. She heard General Syndulla's voice and smiled softly at the familiar sound of her mentor, her second mentor, ordering Vanguard ships against the handful of TIEs escorting the freighter. She thought she heard Will Lark's voice, too, and felt the tension in her muscles momentarily release. Some of her squadron might have survived after all. Syndulla would be disappointed by what Quell intended. Quell's squadron would understand better. They knew her secrets, and Quell was incapable of disappointing them. She could hear Imperial communications, too, where she'd needed to enter decryption codes into the computer to hear Vanguard. The TIEs were decoded automatically. She listened to her first mentor advise the TIE pilots as their numbers dwindled and found the voice of Soren Keyes strangely unfamiliar. She heard the sacrifice of Captain Derrida and mourned. She'd barely known the woman, but they'd watched out for each other, cast glances across the mess hall and stepped in when the other was hassled by a leering member of the Pursuer's crew. Quell had forgotten those moments until now. Like so many others she'd suppressed before Pandem Nye. Captain Derrida would be disappointed in her, too. As for Major Keyes, she wasn't certain. Quell's ship slipped below an asteroid embedded with the wreckage of an ancient dreadnought. She continued her course toward the bulk freighter and increased thruster output. The debris field blurred around her. She didn't have long to act. The Black Tower and the burning eye of Cerberon had nearly buried her in the torment of her past. She was thinking about her future now, had been trying to envision it since she'd left the corpse of Cairn Aiden. "I move forward," the spy had said. ITO, too, had clarified her path. The droid had done so much for her, but when its memory had been stripped away, it had recognized her as just another war criminal deserving punishment. What more could she have expected? The ship emerged from the debris field. She saw the bright orb of Troyth against the stars and realized that the bulk freighter would be out of the planet's gravity well in moments. Shadow Wing would escape back into the galaxy, and New Republic intelligence would be left to begin the chase anew. Only this time, they wouldn't have Cairn Aiden to lead the working group. Quell gingerly depressed a black crystal inlaid in the silver console, then drew back a lever above her head. The ship hummed, softly at first, and then rising to a bone-aching buzz. The cockpit lights dimmed and went out, leaving only the indicators and screens to illuminate the domed compartment. A message flashed onto one of the displays, cloaking system engaged. Quell emitted a small sound of approval. The ship really was a beauty. She sped toward the bulk freighter. She doubted the cloak would last more than a few minutes, but that would suit her well enough. She checked the controls that she thought, she hoped, operated the magnetic clamps, and shifted in the enveloping metal curves of her seat. She winced as her left biceps brushed her harness. She touched it gingerly with two fingers of her right hand, exploring the bandage wrapped around her arm. The wound was still fresh, acquired after she'd taken off from the planetoid and determined her next steps. Beneath the bandage was a swath of burnt and bloodied skin where a tattoo had once been. A tattoo of five mismatched starfighters racing together into battle. She wouldn't need that tattoo anymore. The last ties were speeding into the freighter's cargo bay. The Vanguard fighters were firing wildly as the freighter's light-speed engines powered online. Quell heard Will Lark's voice yell about missile interceptions, and she laughed a little, racing through the chaos toward her target. The freighter was going to escape. It was too late to stop it. Invisible to all sensors, Quell was going to go with it. She'd been thinking about her future and what would become of her in the New Republic. When her tribunal came, who wouldn't see her as ITO had, as her squadron had? She wasn't ready for her existence to end. She left the crushing gravity of the Cerberon black hole behind. She left the darkness and guilt and despair behind. Her ship alighted on the hull of the freighter, and she saw the cerulean glow of hyperspace. Chapter 22. Buoyant Spirits in Something Less Than Celebration. 1. It wasn't until days after the battle that they reunited in the rooftop gardens overlooking Radakia Plaza. The fight to retake control of Cerberon hadn't been difficult, as recent missions went. The battle group had captured Troyth and Katadra once before, and all involved knew the lay of the land. The Imperial guerrilla forces had fought boldly at first, but with the capture of Governor Yadiz, Governor Hastemore's successor, who'd been an aide to the Undersecretary of Imperial Affairs before the Emperor's death, the enemy had dispersed from all but a handful of districts. Those remaining territories would need to be blockaded and contained for many months to come. The guerrillas would remain active for longer, but that would be true across the galaxy. Hera Syndulla thought of it as a victory. Even Shadow Wing's final attack had been largely neutralized. Only a few isolated bunkers and control centers had been destroyed by the missile barrage. Known civilian casualties were currently numbered at 37. "You did everything you could for these people," she told herself. "No victory comes without cost." She tried to look cheerful as she walked the garden's dirt path and listened to the celebratory shouts from below. Wisps of smoke from the troops' impromptu barbecue drifted from the plaza. The gardens were less busy than the street, but the attendees from the medal ceremony had been encouraged to mingle among the flora, and Hera clasped hands and spoke encouragingly to civilian fighters who'd resisted the governor and Shadow Wing's occupation. to soldiers who'd nearly died in the battle at Core 9, and to survivors of the Lodestar who had landed escape pods in enemy territory and trekked across the planet to rejoin their comrades. Her smile grew broader when she spotted Will Lark and Chasna Chattuck. The two pilots were embracing awkwardly under a withered fruit tree, Will standing half a meter back as he clasped the Thelan woman by her shoulders. Chas looked discomfited, but tolerated the touch before pulling back and shoving the toe of her boot in the dirt. The two spoke softly, and Hera nearly walked away before Will spied her and waved her over.
"Glad you found each other," Hera said. "Where's Nath?"
"Making the rounds," Chas said, "showing off his prize. He's got a whole line of locals waiting to thank him."
"I can imagine," Hera said. "We're lucky he survived. That man carries loaded dice."
"He does at that," Will said. And though he smiled, Hera thought she saw something troubled behind the expression, some unspoken doubt. "Ask him another time," she thought, and she indicated for the pair to join her on her walk. Will and Chas murmured to each other while Hera led them among the ceremony goers. She listened, but tried not to interrupt. It seemed they'd exchanged a few brief calls since the fight, but had had few other chances to communicate. Will was asking Chas about what had happened over Katadra, and Chas was asking him about the fight on Troyth. Neither seemed inclined to talk about their experiences. When Chas became visibly agitated, she stepped directly to Hera's side and asked, "How much energy are we wasting on this party anyway? Isn't half the planet still starving?" "Fresh supply ships are finally coming in," Hera said. "In the meantime, it's good to keep morale up." She didn't explain that those fresh supply ships had been won at great expense in a conflict over Agraworlds 3 sectors away. That fight hadn't been Hera's, though she'd spent more than one night discussing it in holographic conference with New Republic High Command.
"Aren't we lucky to be first in line?" Chas muttered.
Hera bit back a retort. She appreciated Chas's fire, even when it was ill-directed. Besides, Chas was right. They shouldn't have been spending time on celebrations. Yet with the Lodestar destroyed, Aiden's working group decimated, and the 61st Mobile Infantry in little better shape, none of them had the resources to pack up and begin a new operation. A crowd down the path parted, and the bulky form of Nath Tenzin swaggered out, addressing soldiers and civilians by name as he went. He spotted Hera and the others and raised a hand in greeting, heading their way.
"Look at us," he called. "Together again, huh?"
He wore his medal pinned to his flight suit, a bronze Nova, awarded for courageous efforts in the service of civilian lives. He looked more comfortable with it than she'd expected. Hera started to congratulate him when Chas repeated, "Together again." Then Will, "Together again." Hera wanted to point out the obvious, but she understood. "We're not ready to talk about the ones we lost." She knew it was best to let them mourn in their own way, but it was a disappointment nonetheless. She'd been hoping, for her sake as much as theirs, to discuss Erica Quell. Two. They wandered the garden a while, but eventually descended to the plaza and joined the troops for the barbecue. Chasna Chattuck stayed with Syndulla, Will, and Nath, drinking a cold, minty brew as they discussed the last few days of cleanup. Will and Nath were frequently pulled into conversations with soldiers Chas didn't recognize, leaving her alone with the general.
"When we finally got a transport out to CER-952B, you can imagine how it went," the general was saying. 100 of our best stranded there while the rest of the company was on Troyth. I'm not sure whether the captain was angrier about missing Shadow Wing or about not being with his soldiers."
"I know how the captain feels," Chas said.
"Don't we all?"
She didn't look at the general. Instead, she watched Nath and Will laugh as they spoke to the woman Will had been talking to when they'd gotten drunk at the refugee camp. Vitali, Chas thought, and a long-haired pilot who looked like 7 decades of pretension poured into a flight suit. Someone called him Dennis. No one invited Chas over. She didn't really expect it. She nonetheless felt a distance from her comrades she hadn't anticipated. Maybe it was what Syndulla had said, the fact she'd missed out on the action, hadn't gone through what Will and Nath had gone through planetside. Maybe it was that they hadn't gone through what she had. Troops on the asteroid were pretty bored, Syndulla said. Same for you when you crash-landed on Katadra? Same for me, Chas said. Boring. Syndulla obviously didn't believe the lie. Chas didn't mind. Will and Nath rejoined them and passed around plates of fried fish caught in the city gutters. Chas's thoughts went to the children of the empty sun. She hadn't told Nath or Will about the cult, hadn't gone back to Katadra. Lettage's lectures remained in their case in her B-wing, and though she hadn't opened the box, she hadn't tossed it either. She hadn't dreamed about Coruscant or had a drink since leaving. You will carry the seed inside you, Lettage had said, and it will grow. We will welcome you when you return. Any lead on the freighter? She asked, and Nath and Will and the General looked surprised. She wondered what they'd been saying when she interrupted. Nothing yet, Syndulla said. New Republic intelligence is still putting the pieces together, trying to figure out everything that happened. My understanding is they're hoping to interview Governor Yadiz, but there are political issues.
The Chancellor's eager to hold someone accountable for Troyth's war crimes, huh?
Nath snorted.
I don't blame her, Syndulla said. Swift justice might help quell Imperial resistance.
No one responded to the wording. No one responded at all. Chas fixed her gaze on the plaza pavement. Syndulla started over.
We'll find the 204th in any event. If anyone wasn't convinced of their significance before, they certainly are now.
You said that last time, Chas muttered, and wrapped her arms around her chest as cold air cut through the limited warmth of the solar projectors. They would find Shadow Wing, though. Quell had been a bastard. But now she couldn't stop them. Chas meant to be there for the end of it all.
Three.
Will Lark did his best to involve Chas when Dennis, Twitch, and Vitali started wagering on when the rioting in Old Skybottom would burn out. He found the conversation in bad taste, but it was the sort of bad taste Chas had always seemed to enjoy. Instead, she ignored him, like she had every effort to engage her that afternoon, shrugging off questions and staring into the middle distance. He tried to accept his failure with grace. He hadn't yet reconciled with Nath, either. He hadn't found the means or the words, or perhaps even the reason. He'd congratulated the older man on his bronze Nova and told him that he deserved it, which Will thought was true. Nath really had almost died to stop the missile from hitting the ground. Though Will wasn't totally convinced Nath had meant to sacrifice himself. That judgment was colored by the knowledge that Nath had indeed found a way to live. But it was partly a way to explain why Nath hadn't sent Will one final message. Now Nath was the face of their victory. The pilot representing all those who'd flown with the infantry during Troyth's darkest hour. He was enjoying his fame, befriending not only freshly arrived troops, but members of Troyth's provisional civilian government. It might have been instinct rather than intent, but Nath, Will thought, was drawn to influence. It was his way to take opportunities. He's done nothing but protect you, Will reminded himself, because that was true, too. He'll figure things out between you. Once, he caught General Syndulla watching him watching Nath. Just thinking, he told her, and hoped it would be enough. They ate and drank more as the evening passed, and they began talking about the dead. About the losses aboard the Lodestar, the near-total destruction of Meteor Squadron, and fatalities among the infantry. They discussed Gorgeous Sue and Carver and the Lodestar's Captain Gigi Nivik, whom Will had never met but Syndulla showed obvious fondness for. It relieved Will to talk about someone he wasn't supposed to know. He felt a measure of shame at not being able to say more about the pilots he'd led to their deaths, but there hadn't been time to get to know them. Somehow, there had always been time in Riot Squadron, no matter what the circumstances, no matter how much chaos there had been. Nasha Gravis, Cairn Aiden's second-in-command among the analysts of the working group, emerged from the crowd as Will, Nath, Chass, and Syndulla sat together on the pavement under the dimming solar projectors. Her slight frame looked almost emaciated, and she couldn't hide a limp on her left side. Like the rest of them, she'd been through trials during Shadow Wing's reign. Nasha offered a curt greeting to the group and, after a few pleasantries, gestured at Nath.
"Let's talk about a few things," she said, and they went.
"You know what that's about?" Chass asked the general.
"Not specifically," Syndulla said. "But Gravis is taking over Aiden's team for the time being."
Chass grunted, stood, and sauntered away. Will thought about following, but Syndulla rested a hand on his knee to stop him.
"I know you're worried about your people," she said, "but stay a minute."
Will nodded and looked at the general. The cheer she'd been exuding for the past hour seemed to dissipate, though she was still smiling.
"I don't know everything you went through," she said, "but I know you made some hard decisions on your own."
He shrugged.
"I was the one left in command. That doesn't mean I deserve all the credit."
"Or all the blame," Syndulla agreed. "But you deserve more than most, and you kept folks alive. You averted the worst-case scenario, where the whole city burned while you fought it out with the 204th. You built a squadron that kept the enemy in check, and in the end, you didn't forget your mission. So far as I'm concerned, you may have made tactical errors here and there, but you made good calls, Mr. Lark."
"Thank you,"
he said, and tried to sound sincere. Syndulla's gentle smile became a smirk.
"I do want to talk about those tactical errors at some point. You're going to make an excellent commander, but you're still new, and you shouldn't have to muddle through it alone." "If I have one regret..."
She cut herself off. She looked as serious as she did during a briefing.
"I was away for too long. I can't be part of Alphabet, but I'm going to be backing you. We're going to do this together, and we're going to chase the 204th down wherever they go. We won't give them a chance to rebuild again."
"I'm glad to hear it," Will said. Hesitantly, he reached out and took Syndulla's hand, clasping it as if they'd made a pact.
"We'll talk about all of this another time. I just wanted to let you know. I appreciate it."
Will stood and looked around the plaza, smiling softly. "Right now, I'm going to take off. It's been a long few days, and I want to turn in early." They said their goodbyes, and Will navigated through the plaza. Staying to celebrate seemed unnecessary. Chass didn't want to be there, and he couldn't force her, and Nath seemed more than occupied. He'd mourned Sue and Prince Pi and Ubelikos with Denish and Vitali the previous evening and barely slept that night. Will was tired, in body and spirit, and he hoped to catch a shuttle back to the spaceport and sleep among the refugees under the bright stars. He wanted to speak to someone, to share what he'd been through, and he thought of composing a message to Blink. But his taste for those missives, for the fantasy of communicating with Shadow Wing, had faded. It wasn't Shadow Wing he needed guidance from, nor was it General Syndulla, no matter how much he respected her efforts. She'd been fighting the war too long to understand what he needed. As he sat aboard the shuttle, body compressed between a bulky young soldier in body armor and an elderly civilian whose head lolled on Will's shoulder, Will composed a message to his elders. He couldn't remember the last time he'd written home, sometime before Shadow Wing and Alphabet Squadron, when he'd planned on leaving Riot Squadron and the war behind. when he'd believed the war was finished. He'd made an oath to return home when the Empire was defeated. General Syndulla believed that he'd made the right choices, but none of his decisions these past days had felt right. Will of Polinius closed his eyes and dreamed of flying. He vowed to find his way back. Four. They really don't want to talk about her, do they? Nath Tenzint laughed long and loud and embittered. No, they don't, he agreed, glancing from General Syndulla to the smoke in the distance. This time the plumes were from fireworks rather than rioters, though he supposed the former could have been in the hands of the latter. Can you blame them? Quell was their commander. Losing her like we did. Are you certain she's lost? Possible she made it out, Nath admitted, and shrugged. If she did, though, makes it more complicated. Syndulla sighed and nodded. I got Aiden's last message, too. Not the woman she said she was. I'm not one to judge moral character, but not stopping Operation Cinder when she had a chance? Nath shrugged again. Let Will and Chas come around in their own time. The kids want to talk, we'll talk when they're ready. Syndulla tucked a head tail behind one shoulder. Nath tried to read her reaction, but couldn't see past the surface. He could be sure that Syndulla had thoughts about Quell that she wasn't ready to share, or that she wasn't interested in sharing with him. Squadron won't be the same, he finally said, but pretty sure we're in it till the end, whatever that looks like. It was a display of confidence he didn't feel. Will and Chas were a mess. Syndulla hadn't said a word about whether the Temperance would be their new flagship or if they would find another. And given what Will had said about Blink, it was increasingly clear that Shadowwing had its own vendetta going. If Alphabet Squadron didn't find them first, well. Syndulla furrowed her brow at something across the plaza. Nath followed her gaze and instantly spotted the tall, non-human woman moving toward them. The woman's legs wobbled with each step. She looked like an AT-ST crossing an oil slick, but she was powering through and didn't fall. She was wrapped in loose gray cloths that looked sewn together from shredded blankets and stained sheets. Nath figured they couldn't help her awkward walk. There was nonetheless something familiar about her outfit. Nath couldn't place it. Her face didn't help. He didn't recognize her species, certainly didn't recognize her features. What he initially took to be skin was a set of chitinous plates perfectly covering her bald head. Gaps in the mauve plating revealed deep-set eyes and thin black lips. As she drew closer, he saw that the plate's edges were chipped and discolored. She gave the impression of a creature scarred. She said his name in a guttural voice. He stood up along with General Syndulla. He knew who she was. I am healed, Kairos said. Nath grinned slowly, broadly, and held back an oath. He had 1,000 questions, but it was the best news he'd heard all day. Five.
Major Soren Keyes, it's good to finally meet you.
You as well, Soren said. He didn't correct her regarding his rank. Grand Admiral Ray Sloan was, according to the rumors, the closest thing the Galactic Empire had to an emperor nowadays. He doubted she was interested in his field promotion. Her hologram cocked its head. She'd heard something in his tone, perhaps, that piqued her. But she didn't follow up on it, and between the static distortion of the image and the freighter's low-quality projector, Soren didn't try to interpret what he saw of her expression.
It's a pity you didn't make contact sooner,
Sloan continued.
By all reports, you made a valiant effort at Cerberon, but you lacked the ships to hold the system. You dealt a solid blow to General Syndulla's battle group, but the General herself still lives. I understand that the 204th is a formidable unit, but it is only one unit, and we no longer outnumber our enemies.
I am aware of that, Admiral. I have been humbled by my experiences. All he'd really heard was, the General herself still lives. He had brought Shadow Wing to Cerberon, promising revenge. He had failed to deliver even that.
How were you humbled, exactly?
Sloane asked. He chose his words carefully. Sloane had, he assumed, eliminated her share of rivals in order to secure her position in command of the fleet. He wished to show that he was no threat, yet he couldn't afford honesty. He'd always heard that Sloane was a patriot and a military officer above all else. Sorin had never been the former. He could hope she would relate to him as the latter. As you said, the 204th is a single unit. As its commander, my primary concern has been the unit's well-being. Merely surviving in the current environment has been challenging, and I knew I could do little to affect the course of the war on my own. Thus, we've focused on precision strikes, ambushes, and the like. My experiences in Cerberon, however, brought me into contact with units less privileged than my own, less able to survive without the support of the Empire as a whole. My view of the war has broadened.
And now you've come to me.
Now I have. Because there are others looking to the 204th for hope. Because the likes of Governor Yadiz and the people of Troyth deserve more. Because while they aren't my responsibility, and here he thought not only of the people of Troyth, or of the cadets he had found aboard the Edict, or of Colonel Madrigast and the Imperial Fleet, but of Rickton, whom the Wanderer Devon had tried to save. I would be a miser to refuse to give what I can give freely.
Good.
Admiral Sloane studied him, then shook her head briskly.
I'm sending you rendezvous coordinates for one of our battle groups. You will resupply there. Expect a limited capacity for repairs. I'll see what I can do about finding you a better carrier, but you may be stuck with the freighter.
I understand, Sorin said, and I appreciate any help you can provide. Do you have a mission in mind?
Possibly.
She looked to one side, either referencing a file or signaling someone else in the room.
Your unit was involved in Operation Cinder, correct? Action in the Necronus system?
Yes, Admiral.
That puts you in a rarefied group. It tells me your pilots are steadfast as well as skilled.
It sounded like praise, but her smile was bitter.
We'll have a use for you. Expect new orders shortly.
The hologram flashed into non-existence, the light staining Sorin's retinas and leaving him blinking away spots. His expression fell with the same suddenness as Sloane's disappearance, and he stroked the comm panel with trembling fingers. He had made a bargain that he would surely curse, if not regret. He had recommitted himself and his unit to a losing battle for an empire not worthy of being saved. For the sake of giving desperate soldiers a brief reprieve from their graves or New Republic prison cells. But he had hoped not to hear of Operation Cinder again. Those days represented the worst of the Empire and the Emperor's atrocities.
I imagine you're pleased, he asked.
In the corner of the dim communications center stood a figure in a red robe. One arm dangled at its side, severed midway between elbow and shoulder. The glass-like plate of its face flickered and sparked with light that, on occasion, resolved into the image of the dead Emperor Palpatine. Sorin had not asked for the messenger to be brought aboard the freighter, but someone had delivered it anyway. He'd only discovered its presence after the escape from Troyth and the jump to lightspeed.
You are but one of many tools,
it said in the Emperor's decrepit voice, before the sound became an electronic squeal and the words played a second time, a third, over an ear-piercing shriek.
Without thought or intent, Soren swung at the machine. Pain lanced from his knuckles to his elbow as his fist impacted the curved plate, and as he pulled his hand away, he saw that he'd left a red smear across the glass, along with a web of cracks.
"Operation Cinder,"
the droid said,
"is to begin at once."
Soren wondered whether the words were echo or portent. Six. She waited in an unpowered cargo turbo lift, the closest thing on hand to a cell, she suspected. Her guard's name was Mervaes Gandor, and he snorted when he laughed, raised bantha calves on his home world, and had been the single clumsiest ordnance specialist aboard the Pursuer. She wasn't sure he recognized her. She barely recognized him. She didn't try to make conversation. Outside the elevator, through the small window and past Gandor, she could see TIE fighters lined neatly throughout the hold and uniformed men and women hurrying between them, decoupling hoses and unbolting hull panels and performing tasks meant for droids. She tried to make out faces and failed to identify many. The unit really had changed.
"Stand back,"
Gandor said through the intercom. She did, and the door rose fast enough to wash stray locks of hair behind her ears. Scents of fuel and dust filled her nostrils. A man walked into her line of sight. His brown hair appeared black as he passed through a shadow, and his thin, delicate lips looked out of place on his angular face. He carried himself with an easy confidence, though there was a weariness to him she'd never seen before. Her eyes fell to his right hand, where a strip of sanitary cloth was wrapped around his knuckles.
"Everything all right?"
she asked. He followed her gaze and smiled gently.
"An accident, thank you."
They studied each other. His smile faded.
"Why don't you tell me why you're here?"
Soren Keyes said. She straightened her back. The words came naturally.
"Lieutenant Erica Quell, reporting for duty."
This is Carol Monda. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Shadowfall by Alexander Freed. This program was directed by Scott Presswell. Executive producer Nick Martorelli. Star Wars: Shadowfall is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and is registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.